Clinical counseling is a critical part of the Genesis continuum of care offered to women and children who experience domestic violence. Ruth Garrido, Senior Director of Clinical Services at Genesis Women's Shelter and Support, explains the program and how it helps. I'm Maria McMullen, and this is Genesis the Podcast. Ruth, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. I always love talking with you. And I know you've been working at Genesis for a while, definitely longer than my three-year tenure. Tell us about your role.
Yeah, so I've been at Genesis for 10 years now.
I am 10 years?
10 years.
I didn't realize you had your 10th anniversary.
Yes, I have. Yeah, last September.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. It's been great. I am the Senior Director of Clinical and Non-Residential Services. So I am a licensed clinical social worker, which just means I'm a therapist. And I actually now am over the clinical department. So I've got about 15 counselors that I supervise right now, and they are at all of our locations, at residential and non-residential. And I train and supervise and hire and do all of the things to keep our clinical team running with our procedures. And, you know, we recently started a new database. And so just making sure that everyone is trained in how to do all of that. Part of my role also is I go and do speaking engagements in the community. I provide expert testimony at court and, just making sure, you know, I have a really great team. So just making sure that everything is running with our clinical department and the services that we offer at our outreach location.
I know you are one of the busiest people I know, at least at Genesis. We all have very busy schedules, but I know it's jam-packed with women and children coming through the non-residential building every day. Yeah. And I love the work that you're doing. But before we talk about the clinical program at Genesis specifically, tell us about the trauma of domestic violence and why the response of clinical counseling is so important.
Yeah, I like this question because I think a lot of times we think of a woman who has experienced intimate partner violence and it's just how it's impacting her relationship with her partner, right? But what we know is that it bleeds into so many other places. So it can cause her to not sleep at night, either because of fear or anxiety of what's he going to do next, or what's going to happen to me, or what should I do about this situation? And then we all know when you have no sleep, then it's bleeding into your work. And now you can't focus as well at work or at school. You know, it's harder to pay attention to what you're supposed to be doing when you're thinking about the abuse. Being abused by someone can cause you to not trust people. And so now maybe you aren't as trusting of other people that you meet or in your friendships, having a hard time understanding or believing that they really have your best interest in mind, because the person who said that they love you and they, you know, want everything for you has now kind of gone back on that word and, right, you know, abused you. We see a lot of times it can affect a woman in her parenting, not her parenting abilities, but in her confidence as a mom. If her abuser is constantly saying, "You're a bad mom, you don't know what you're doing," or even telling the kids, "Your mom doesn't know what she's doing, she doesn't love you, she's not a good mom." And so then it can cause her to feel like, "Oh, well, I guess I'm not." And so we can see a lot of low self-esteem or hesitancy in trying new things and learning new things. We also see lots of physical ailments, Maria. I think people forget, like, having that extra stress and being abused, that trauma can turn into a lot of headaches or stomach aches or just feeling really lethargic all of the time. And then, of course, we see depression and anxiety, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD can bleed into areas that now are impairing your function. And so it's hard to stay organized and you forget appointments and you're not, you know, at the top of your game in what you're, whatever it is that you're doing.
It sounds a lot like the body keeps the score. You know, that trauma is hiding somewhere in the body. And whether we feel it today or we feel it 10 years from now, if we don't address it directly, it's going to cause other issues for us.
Yeah, so that's actually really important to remember that these things can come back later, right? So an example that we use with our clients when talking about the importance of doing counseling, if you think about the story that there was a landfill, right? Lots of garbage. And the city decided we were going to build a soccer field on top of this landfill. So instead of cleaning it out, they just pushed it down. They packed it down into the earth and then they put soil and dirt and everything else on top and they created and they built this beautiful soccer game or soccer field. And as the years went on, people were playing on this soccer field and there started to be some holes and kids were tripping when they were running and they realized that what was happening is this garbage had started to come up. You know, the soil was settling in and now this garbage was coming up. We use this example or this analogy when talking to clients about counseling. So there are a lot of times that clients don't want to do the hard work of counseling. I'm the first person to say counseling is not fun. It's not supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be pleasant and you just come in mm-hmm. and talk and vent. There is a lot of really hard emotional work that goes into the trauma processing of your experiences. And so what will happen is if you don't pull that stuff out, like that garbage, you're not pulling it out, then it's going to show up later in life. So maybe it shows up in a future relationship or it shows up down the road through a trauma trigger by a boss getting upset at you and all of a sudden your brain goes back to that moment of abuse with your partner. So sometimes it's okay for clients to say, I don't want to do the trauma processing. And so they're not ready to go there yet. And that's okay. We will work with them. We meet them where they're at. That's like yeah. this thing that we always say in yeah. counseling, meet the client where they're at. But we meet her where she's at and what she wants to do. But we talk to her about how this is possibly going to affect the future. And so instead, if she's ready or when she's ready, then we're able to do that trauma processing and help her kind of get all of that yucky stuff out so that then she can have this beautiful soccer field that she can play on.
I love that metaphor. I just love thinking about it in that way. I think it really makes the idea of trauma being buried and what would happen as a result of that to the individual. It makes it very accessible and then easy for people to understand why a place like Genesis needs to have clinical counseling, why that is so important. So thank you for that. So to that point then, what is the Genesis model to respond to trauma from domestic violence?
Yeah, so we have a lot of different client services at Genesis, one of those being counseling, and we really believe in this holistic approach. And so counselors work with clients on their feelings and their thoughts and their body sensations around what's happening and their symptoms and what happened to them. And then we have other teams who are helping with the outside approach, right? So we have our advocates doing the referrals and the resources and we're meeting their needs in a holistic way. So specifically for counseling, we are looking at how her point of view has changed maybe from domestic violence. Like I mentioned, you might start to feel like you don't trust someone. And so that we look at that at, okay, that's her worldview, right? Like she is seeing now that maybe no one is trustworthy or all men are scary or I don't deserve love or I don't deserve safety. And so through counseling, we're able to look at, okay, how did the domestic violence affect you? What are your symptoms? We always talk about an individualized treatment plan. So we're looking at, okay, maybe for one client, she needs individual counseling. Another client, she might need group counseling. Another client might need both, right? So we do have a group model at Genesis and really encourage everyone to come to groups because we know that in domestic violence, there's a lot of isolation that's happening. That's part of the abuse. And so when a woman can come into a group with other women who have experienced domestic violence, she now no longer feels alone, right? We know the stats, 1 in 3 women in Texas, 1 in 4 women worldwide, right? But when she's the one experiencing it, it feels like she's the only one. So being in a group of women and being able to hear, oh, it happened to you too. Oh, you also feel that way. It helps her feel more comforted that she's not the only one, but also recognize like, okay, what he's doing is not okay, right? This is abusive behaviors. And it's so much more powerful for her to hear it from another group member than it is from a counselor.
Yeah, there's definitely a strength there to be found within groups for people who have experienced trauma. How many people are we serving roughly at Genesis for the through the clinical counseling program?
So on average, we serve about 700 women and children in ongoing therapy every year, but that is the ones who are participating in ongoing, right? We serve a lot more women through phone calls and the text messages. We do a lot of intakes for women. So this past year, we had 500 intakes. So that's 500 women that came into Genesis for the very first time to receive services. That's about 10 women a week, right? We had 845 group sessions this past year. That's almost 16 group sessions a week. Wow. Where we are having so many women come in to be served.
And just to be clear, a week would be 5 business days, because you're talking about groups held for non-residential clients, so people who are not in shelter.
Right.
So that would be 5 business days, Monday through Friday, 16 a week. That's roughly a little over 3 a day. And groups are an hour?
Some of them are an hour, some an hour and a half. Our residential clients are also invited to attend these groups.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, that is a lot of time, because that would be in addition to seeing clients individually, answering calls or respond or returning calls and texts.
Yep.
And all of the other things that need to be done by the clinical counseling team. So it's significant to say that we have that many groups in a week.
It is, yes.
And those groups, are they offered in both English and Spanish?
They are, yes. So everybody wants to know how many English versus Spanish speaking clients we have. Yeah. It just depends on how many English and Spanish speaking counselors I have, right? So when it's half and half, it's half and half. Like it's always
we. But the demand is there.
The demand is always there. Yes.
Demand for Spanish speaking counselors and English, but also Spanish, is there enough for you to be able to say that when you have the counselors available, you can fill all those spots?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, something I'm really proud of during COVID that my team did was we created a YouTube channel and we did webinars.
I love the YouTube channel.
Thank you. Yeah, we did webinars for our clients, because a lot of times it was no longer safe for them to attend groups.
Sure.
And so it was a way for us to provide an opportunity for clients to watch it at their convenience, right? Whenever they could get on, if it was the middle of the night or it was in the middle of the day when he was at work or he had stepped outside, you know, to go to the gas station, she could watch a quick video to learn about the dynamics of abuse, parenting ideas on how to help your children heal from abuse, safety planning. And so I bring up the YouTube channel because we have videos in English and in Spanish.
So that was my next question. It's like you're reading my mind.
Yes. Yeah. So we have over 50 in English and over 50 in Spanish.
And where can people find that? I assume it's on YouTube, but specifically, how would they search it up?
Yep. They can just search Genesis Client Services.
Okay. On YouTube.
On YouTube.
So go to YouTube. This is our homework. Go to YouTube and check out that channel in both English and Spanish. What are the different therapy methods that your team employs for trauma counseling?
Yeah, so we use a trauma-informed approach, right? There are several different therapies specifically for PTSD. And so we do EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
Very good.
We do EMDR with women and with children, and we do it in individual and group. Of course, in English and in Spanish.
Wow.
We use CPT, which is cognitive processing therapy for women, and TFCBT, which is trauma-focused CBT with children.
Okay, so that's a lot of initials and
yes.
letters. pick one and dive into it. Pick one that we can explain to the listeners of what that method looks like.
Yeah, so I'll choose EMDR. It's a great one because it's really effective to work on different things. So sometimes a client wants to work on this one episode of abuse that just happened, and we can. It's a protocol type of therapy. So that means that there's a script that the counselor reads. There's specific questions that we're asking, but really we're diving into what was her thought about it, and the thought about herself regarding the abuse, which might mean that she's saying, I'm unlovable, for example, right? Mm-hmm. And then what's the feeling that goes with that? Well, the feeling might be shame. And what's the body sensation? Maybe I have a pit in my chest. And then we're able to do some eye movements, hence the name, or some tapping. We call it bilateral stimulation, but we really help to connect the brain and the heart. So the easiest way that I like to explain it is that I have a problem about chocolate cake. I love chocolate cake. It's a little bit of a weakness for me.
That is not a problem, Ruth.
Thank you. Yeah. When I see chocolate cake, I just want to eat it.
Me
and
too.
I do feel like, oh, I need to eat this piece of chocolate cake because look, it's moist and delicious,
yeah.
Right? If I were to do, okay, well, but my head might be telling me otherwise, right?
Sure.
Maybe you don't need a piece of chocolate cake at 10 in the morning, Ruth. Or,
right.
Hey, you've been complaining about your clothes not fitting. Maybe you shouldn't eat that chocolate cake.
I think your head is wrong. But go ahead. Yeah.
So if I were to do EMDR on my need to eat chocolate cake, mm-hmm. what I'm doing is helping my head and my heart align so that then my head can help my heart understand that it's okay if I don't eat the chocolate cake, right? And help kind of change my viewpoint. So we talk about with clients finding flexible ways of thinking or changing our thinking patterns so that she might feel after an abusive experience that she is at fault, that she did something wrong, that she's causing the abuse. And her head might tell her, no, it wasn't wrong to tell him to pick up his socks. It wasn't wrong for you to not have dinner 100% ready when he came home. But this is the lie that goes into this domestic mm-hmm. violence, right? He's saying, well, if you wouldn't have, then I wouldn't have, right?
Right.
And so it's this constant blame game. So doing EMDR helps her heart and her head align so that her heart can no longer feel that sting of it's her fault, because now she can see it from a different point of view and see, oh yeah, no, he is responsible for his actions and I'm responsible for my actions.
Okay, so this brings up so many questions for me. Aligning the heart with the head or the brain, is there a chemical or biological change that actually happens by performing that EMDR?
You know what the funniest thing about EMDR is that no one really understands why it works or how it works. It's just you are engaging both sides of your brain by doing this bilateral stimulation, which is the tapping or the eye movements, and it somehow makes a connection. So I like to talk about the hippocampus mm-hmm. in your brain mm-hmm. is this master puzzle guru, and it puts together little pieces of puzzles of your experience to make it a completed puzzle. What happens in trauma, and that's your hippocampus's job, right? Because it's memory.
Sure.
In trauma, the hippocampus is not online to be able to put those puzzle pieces together, but through EMDR, it fixes it. It causes your brain to be able to reprocess your experience, reconsider the way that you experienced it and what you thought about it and what you thought about the world when it was happening or what you thought about the abuser. And it connects it back together so that it will form this puzzle that's completed, and you can see it from like an adult perspective, right? You can see it from a perspective that's not, it's my fault, but this is what happened to me.
And maybe a perspective that's not in the trauma at the time, but kind of working through it after the fact.
Correct.
So yep. your mind or your brain is actually in a completely different state when you are doing EMDR because you're not in that flight or fight response.
Right. Yes. Now, there are times when you're going to be doing therapy, whether it's EMDR or something else, where you will start to feel like you're in the trauma again, right? Mm-hmm. That's part of trauma. And so then our counselors are trained in helping clients to ground, in helping them to bring back to like their mind that I'm not currently in danger. I'm sitting in my therapist's office, so that then they will be able to have that dual awareness of what happened in the past versus what's happening right now, to be able to do that. You know, people think that EMDR or therapy is going to help them forget about their past or forget about those that abuse. Unfortunately, that's not how it works. You can't forget it. But what it does do is it takes away the sting, which I think is really important, because eventually when you do therapy, then you'll be able to talk about the experience without the feelings and body sensations connected to it, right? It will just be, yes, this happened and it was terrible. You're still not going to feel good that it happened to you, but you're not going to, your body isn't going to feel like you're in the abuse in the moment.
Right. It's an incredibly complex approach to a complex issue for people who've experienced trauma. I could ask you questions about this all day, but we don't have that kind of time today. But we will have you back to talk about EMDR and other methods at another time on the podcast. So what's the end game with EMDR? What's the one thing that you anticipate clients can get out of using that method?
So our goal is to decrease trauma symptoms, right? Whether she's reporting nightmares or flashbacks or depression or feelings of suicidality or hopelessness, our goal is, how do we decrease those symptoms for her? Unfortunately, domestic violence continues whether you leave the relationship or not. But how can we help the effects decrease, right? What can we do so that she no longer feels like it's her fault, so that she can find her voice again and feel empowered? Her sense of self is increased, so that she feels confident in being able to take steps towards decreasing risk, which we call safety planning, or that she feels confident to go out and get that job because she knows she's no longer going to get triggered when her boss yells at her. Hopefully bosses are not yelling at people, but
I would hope not.
It actually comes up in counseling all of the time.
Really?
Yes. And so having those trauma triggers, if we can eliminate them or decrease them, then she can function better in society.
So does a person typically have more than one of these issues that needs to be addressed through EMDR?
Yes. Yes. So there's a difference between going through one traumatic experience versus multiple traumatic experiences. We call this complex trauma when there's just been a lot of things. So naturally, in complex trauma, you're going to have several triggers. You're going to have several things that you're working on in EMDR. Even when it's one abusive incident, there might be different parts of the abusive incident that cause different triggers or that cause different symptoms. So it's not a come in one time and we'll take it all away. We try our hardest to help in a short amount of time to help the client feel better. But, you know, it does take some time.
So you may need to use the technique multiple times, potentially, if a person has complex trauma.
Yes. So when we're talking about wanting to decrease their PTSD symptoms, you know, we really take a lot of pride in making sure that what we're doing is working, that our therapy is actually helpful to clients. And so we administer different measures. And I have to tell you, because I'm really proud of my team and the work that they do. So we pull reports, of course, on like, how are we doing? And
Sure. We
have a goal of helping clients decrease their PTSD symptoms by at least 40% after attending 10 sessions with a counselor.
Yes.
And we consistently meet at least 50% of our clients are decreasing by 40% just after 10 sessions. So it's not, I'm telling you that it takes a while, and it doesn't take a while to feel better. It just takes a while to get it all out.
Sure.
But you can start feeling better quickly.
That's incredible. Those results really are amazing. So does EMDR require a certification?
Yes. Yes. So you have to do the training. Mm-hmm. And then once you complete the basic training, you're able to use it. And then if you accrue certain hours and number of clients that you do that, then you can become certified. So
and you're certified.
I am certified. Is yes.
Your team?
Some of them.
Okay. Yeah.
Some of them are still working on it. Some of them are brand new therapists and haven't gotten trained yet.
Sure.
But yes, that is the goal.
So that's the goal, to have the whole team certified in EMDR and what else?
Yep. Trained in CPT, of course, is helpful. Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about kids yet, but we do a lot of children's therapy. And so getting trained in that and learning the different ways that you can use different modalities with kids is really fun. I started out as a children's therapist, so that's my favorite.
Yeah. Tell us about the services for children who have experienced domestic violence.
Yeah. So we see kids ages 2 to 18. We see them in individual and in group. And we also do attachment therapy with moms and kids together. Sometimes we'll do family therapy with siblings together or siblings and a mom. So like I mentioned, we do the EMDR. We do trauma-focused CBT. It's a lot of feelings identification and then coping skills. And then we're working up to, now let's talk about the trauma. Let's talk about watching dad get arrested or seeing dad hit mom or seeing mom really sad all of the time. And so we do what's called a trauma narrative or a story template with kiddos. Depending on their age, right? Teenagers, it's going to look different. It's going to be a lot of expressive arts, or we're doing activity therapy mm-hmm. by making really, I'm hoping that therapists just learn how to make any interaction a therapeutic experience, right? Sure. So the kiddo wants to play with Barbies. Great. Let's play with Barbies and the dollhouse. And how do we talk about the abuse in that? And how do we act it out with the Barbies or the puppets or the cars?
Now, is that an example of play therapy?
Yes. Yep. So we do directive play therapy with our kiddos and helping them to really express themselves through their play.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. We also offer childcare.
We do.
While mom is receiving trauma counseling or some other service at Genesis.
Yes. And I love that because we know that childcare is a huge barrier for our population. Yes. And so being able to provide that on site, and it's not just regular childcare that you go into a room and then you just sit there with the person, right? It's trauma-informed childcare, which means that our childcare workers understand how trauma affects kids. And so if a kiddo, you know, let's say there's 3 kids in there and 1 kid doesn't want to share their toy, we can understand, oh, this might be related to the trauma. And so being able to respond appropriately rather than just like yelling at the kid, you know, give that toy back.
Right, right. Well, that definitely is a significant contribution to the wraparound service of, you know, providing this clinical counseling program. So what I hear you say is, I'm going to run down the things I took away from the conversation, and then you add on anything else that I missed or we didn't talk about. We offer counseling, clinical counseling, in both English and Spanish, to women and children who have experienced domestic violence. And we offer individual counseling, group counseling, in person and virtual, right? Through telehealth.
We haven't talked about that. Yes.
Talk about that.
Yes, we do telehealth with adults and children. It's been an adjustment. We have found it to be really helpful for some clients and not so successful for other ones. And so those are the ones that we then are inviting to please come back into the office. Right now, I did pull some numbers. Right now, we are at about 60% of our clients are coming to in-person appointments.
Great.
Which is great because we're able to do – it's good work on telehealth, I will say. It helps. But because of domestic violence, there could be some safety concerns, right? So being able to have her in front of us and being able to do that safety planning in a way that we know there's no way the abuser could overhear this, or there's no way that he would see, you know, the Zoom history on her computer if she's at home. Sure. Doing telehealth. But, you know, being able to have them in the office And children, just across the board, it's so much easier in person because you can actually play and interact. Right. And when you're doing telehealth with kids, it's you have to be very creative, and they're usually not sitting down at the computer. And so they're like, you know, running around their bedroom, and they're showing you their things in their room, which we can use then to be a therapeutic moment. But it's a little bit easier when I'm in the playroom with them and can follow them around the room and play and engage.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. So in everything that we talked about, and maybe even the stuff we haven't talked about, it's all free.
Yes.
All no cost. All clinical counseling to women and children is no cost at Genesis, including the on-site childcare, which is also no cost. So it's completely supported from community philanthropy and available 24/7 by calling or texting just to get started.
Yes. So many people are reaching out right now. When you look at the numbers of callers for services, we had this last year 2,000 women call to begin counseling services.
Wow.
Yes, we have about 50% of our callers are asking for shelter, and then 25% are asking for counseling. When we look at the calls for services that we receive at Genesis, 50% of them are asking for shelter, and then we have 25% asking for counseling, about 16% looking for advocacy services, and about 9% looking for legal services. So it is a big thing that people want to come in for counseling.
Yeah, it is in demand for sure. Okay, how can people get in touch with a clinical counselor at Genesis?
Yes, they can call us at our hotline or text at 214-946-4357. They can also call us during business hours at the non-residential location, which is 214-389-7700.
And the website is genesisshelter.org. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing all of that. It's also holiday time. We are getting very close to the biggest holidays of the year that also wrap up the end of the year. How are things going with the holiday program for clients at Genesis?
We love this time of year. It is so fun to talk with clients about the holiday program that Genesis can offer them. As you know, we are doing a gift card donation drive.
Yes.
And being able to talk to the clients about which gift cards she would like and what she can do with those gift cards, it's been a huge blessing to be able to empower them so that they can choose what gifts they get for their children. They can choose the coat that she fits and that she wants to wear, right? Or her own purse rather than just getting something that we were able to
that we selected or randomly ended up being on her Christmas list.
Exactly. Yeah. So
it is very empowering.
It is. Yeah. It's really great. You know, she talks about this one thing that her kids saw in the toy store that he really wanted. Who better to go and choose it out for him than the mom, right?
And it feels so special when you do that for your own child or child who's a loved one.
Right. And for the mom to be able to see that she helped in causing this kid to be happy on Christmas morning because they got the perfect gift,
yes,
or that the exact shoe that fits them well. It right. just is so nice to have her feel, oh, okay, I am a good mom. I am helping my kid to be happier despite this really hard time we're going through.
It's so beautiful. You're making me excited for the holidays. And I hope all of our listeners are excited too. If you want to support holiday gifts for women and children at Genesis, there's still time to donate gift cards to our holiday drive that allow moms at Genesis to shop for special gifts for their children. Learn all about it at genesisshelter.org/holiday. We also want to mention one more time that we do offer services in both English and Spanish.
Yes.
So today, for the very first time, we are going to include the information on how to reach Genesis in Spanish. And it will be in every episode going forward of Genesis, the podcast, to include all of our contact information in Spanish. Look for bonus content as well, wherever podcasts are found, about this specific way to get in touch with Genesis if you are Spanish speaking. And please share that widely with people who need to have that information. For this information and information about everything we discussed today, Follow Genesis on social media at Genesis Women's Shelter on Facebook and Instagram, and at Genesis Shelter on Twitter. Questions about this topic or about the podcast can be sent to me at podcast@genesisshelter.org. And as Ruth mentioned, you can reach us 24/7 by phone call or text at 214-946-4357. Happy holidays, Ruth.
Happy holidays. Thanks, Maria.
See you next time. Attention Spanish-speaking listeners. Listen to the end of this podcast for information on how to reach a Spanish-speaking representative of Genesis.
Atención hispanohablantes. Escucha este podcast hasta el final para recibir información de cómo comunicarse con el personal de Genesis en español.
If you or someone you know is in an abusive relationship, you can get help or give help at genesisshelter.org or by calling or texting our 24/7 crisis hotline team at 214-946-HELP, 214-946-4357. Bilingual services at Genesis include text, phone call, clinical counseling, legal services, advocacy, and more. Call or text us for more information. Donations to support women and children escaping domestic violence are always needed. Learn more at genesisshelter.org/donate. Thanks for joining us. And reminding you always that ending domestic violence begins when we believe her.
Genesis, el podcast, anuncia servicios bilingües disponibles en Genesis Women's Shelter y Support. Si usted o una conocida está en una relación abusiva, puede recibir ayuda o dar ayuda a genesisshelter.org o por llamar o mandar mensaje de texto a nuestra línea de crisis de 24 horas al 214-946-4357. Servicios bilingües de Genesis incluyen mensajes de texto, llamadas, consejería, servicios legales, asesoría y más. Llámenos o mándenos un texto para más información. Siempre se necesitan donaciones para apoyar a las mujeres o a los niños escapando de la violencia doméstica. Aprende más a nuestra página de internet en genesisshelter.org/donate. Gracias por unirse con nosotros. Recuerden que el terminar la violencia doméstica empieza cuando creemos a la víctima.